Hi, welcome back to Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Judy Nathans.
And over here, I'm Robert Winters.
Yes, you are. Okay.
Yeah.
So maybe we should go back to the city council meeting of the 11th, which was,
There was one of the big items that was actually drawing a lot of people to that particular meeting was there were some proposals from the city manager, basically, and the public works department and others for some extensions of timelines and things relating to the development of some of those separated bike lane infrastructure, because the requirements of the existing bicycle safety ordinance, right? Always sounds like Boston Symphony Orchestra or something to me, or is it cycling safety ordinance, which would be combined sewer overflow?
Yeah. Okay.
But anyway, whatever your acronym happens to be, that unless they come up with a plan for, or start actually doing some much more elaborate changes in the roadway, they would be obligated basically to go with the plastic posts, the quick build, they call them quick build bicycle, separated bicycle infrastructure, which, and just sort of do that. So now, because there is, at least the way I heard it all, because there, especially in the vicinity of Porter Square, there are some perhaps better possibilities for how to do this in a way that's much more acceptable to more people, possibly even preserving some parking, but also, doing it in conjunction with the removal of the catenaries, the MBTA.
Well, that was a big issue during this meeting, how can you count on the MBTA to do it when you need to do it? And did Toner, was it Paul Toner? It said, we can go up there and just take some.
He said, if you give us some bolt cutters, we'll be up, we'll be happy to do it.
But Carlone
it's a little bit more complicated than that.
I know, I would think so.
Yeah.
Might get electrocuted or something.
Yeah. But from my point of view, it's just obvious that if you do have a better plan, you shouldn't just do a crappy plan just so you can tear it up to put the better one in. If you have to wait a few months or a year in order to do the better one, you should wait that year. I mean, I don't think that's the end of the world. But because of the way the ordinance is written, that is not an option unless you make an amendment to the ordinance. But we have that little dilemma that nobody, there are a lot of people signed a paper saying thou shalt not change the ordinance. So, so they did actually, I believe the city council was set to, to approve some modifications. And again, I think Councillor Zondervan was pointing out that the requirements of the ordinance are breathing down our necks, so there can be no delay. But Councillor Carlone did choose to exercise his charter right to delay it, which in this case was 2 weeks because of the holiday, which really doesn't change things, because then they'll just have to act on it then. But I think Dennis Carlone was kind of pretty right on about the idea, though, that why would you want to invest a lot of money and do a lot of changes, just, waiting for the MBTA to take down some of the the electric bus lines, and then that, with that, providing a much better way to do a better project, the urban design architecture kind of guy that he is, think he was just talking sense. But we have the politics of bike lanes and the perceived immediacy of you got to do everything immediately or else everybody's going to die. And that's, kind of a dishonest way of looking at the world, but that's kind of the political hand that's been dealt.
Yeah.
So anyway, that'll come up, for action this coming Monday. Presumably they'll
deal with it again.
I mean, there were some numbers, rather extraordinary numbers, being tossed around by Young Kim and a few others about 50, was it $55 million total for doing this?
That did not come from the report itself.
It was in the report.
Yeah, right.
But there was no action made because of the,
I'm just saying it would cover about 2 miles. And they were saying,
right.
So then they asked Kathy Watkins, what does that cover? And I guess 14 million of that would be for Harvard Square changes, which might be permanent. And then the rest is paving, pedestrian ramps, removal of the median. Is that
right?
Really? That, well, I could see that creating new crosswalks and new traffic signals. So there's a lot going in.
Yeah. So the notion, I certainly hope people weren't, didn't walk away from that meeting thinking that it was $55 million to put in plastic posts.
Right, exactly.
Paint and posts.
That's right. That's what it could look like. Yeah, right.
Right. You know, but if you are going to spend serious bucks, you ought to do the job in a serious, comprehensive way. And
the question is, would it be permanent? Would some of this stuff remain, or would you have to dig it up again?
In my view, do what you're going to do, but in a more permanent way. And if it takes a little longer, that's really what you ought to be doing.
Okay.
It just,
pretty
obvious, you know? So anyway, so that was one of the big items, I think, that was kind of floating around at that particular meeting, right? Mm-hmm. Is that fair to say? What was some other items?
I like the policy order that was proposed by Lana Mallon about the having a designated person for people who are going through the permit process for natural disasters, i.e. like a fire in your house. And that, I think that was important, because having been experienced that myself or through someone else, it can be a nightmare to just have different, you know, plumbing this way. So to have one point, I think that was the policy order, to have a point person that could expedite some of this for a hardship, not hardship, but you know what I mean. If you had a fire, something where it's a need, you know, you need to get moving on it. You can't just.
Well, I think I would actually add to that and say that you can focus on specifics of having like a fire.
Right.
That, you know, then, and then somebody's got to navigate the system in order to, you know, expedite basically rebuilding and doing all that.
Yeah.
But the truth is that the cities has, in some ways, it's efficient, it's run efficiently, but in other ways, especially when it comes to building and you know, inspectional services or whatever, it can be really nightmarish.
And I know, and people have experienced it. And it's been, because, you know, there's state codes, and then there's one hand telling you, well, this is the way it's supposed to be, and then you find out it's another way. Someone needs to.
Yeah, I think that's sort of it. I think it's sort of a, there ought to be a general recognition.
Yeah,
we need to make it easier for people who need to do complicated things to navigate the system without losing their minds or walking away.
Right. I mean, they're trying to provide housing, or they're trying to, you know, at least recover their law, you know.
Right.
I mean,
and if there is an opportunity, like if a building disappeared, but then you want, and you're going to rebuild it, if there is a relatively quick way to get some input for how to do it better. I mean, sometimes, you know, a person who's rebuilding a house, for example, they're going to build a more energy efficient house. They'll probably be putting in solar panels on the roof. You know,
maybe. They want to do all.
Yeah. I mean, I think there are a lot of incentives and reasons why those better things would probably happen naturally anyway, because they're just good choices. You know, you're not going to rebuild an energy inefficient, crummy shack. You're going to build the best building you can.
Well, it depends on. Well, yeah.
Unless it breaks the bank, But as long as it's not going to break the bank.
If it's for your own domicile, people will tend to do that. But if it's for, if you're an absentee landlord or something and you just want to get your rentals back up, you may not do that.
There are certain circumstances I've seen over the years where if there may be a regulatory advantage to rebuilding a property exactly within the footprint of the existing building, even if that was not really the ideal way to situate the building on the lot, right? So, you know, you'd certainly want to have at least a little flexibility, and, you know, hopefully the regulations should permit enough flexibility without, you know, allowing some, you know, madman developer to just basically go lot line to lot line all around, just because they can.
Some will do that as long as it doesn't require certain variances, and if they're allowed to do it as a right, they'll do that. So that's a whole other issue. But
anyway. Actually, you know, one of the more entertaining things that happened at that last city council meeting for me was there was a city council order. I forget who it was. Councillor Nolan and somebody maybe introduced it.
Which one
that had to do with idling.
Oh.
You know, it was like an anti-idling
law. Is like the BBNN crowd, right? Wasn't it something to do with BBNN parents waiting for their kids? Are you sure about that?
No. It was something else. It was, and I'm kind of having a hard time sort of finding it here right now. But basically, there's a law that exists on the books in New York City that basically gives people a right to basically make money. They get to split the fine if they catch somebody, breaking an anti-idling law, like a bounty.
Yes.
Apparently there are some people who basically do this for a living now in New York, is looking for people who are violating it and then, acting like a bounty hunter, to go and make some money off. And I thought to myself, boy, that might actually lead to some rather curious conflicts.
That's terrible. That's kind of like a lighter version of the abortion law in Texas.
Exactly. Yeah. Ooh. So I think there seemed to be a little bit of pushback from the city council.
But I do think it did relate to the BBNN issue, because parents wait for their kids, and there was complaints about that from neighborhoods.
It was Councillor Azeem who was the one who exercised his charter right after as part of the discussion
bounty portion.
I think it was actually Councillor Toner is the one who pulled the item for discussion. It was order number two of the last council meeting.
So that's charter right?
Yeah, so that comes back. And I imagine they're going to amend that basically to kind of soften the incentive to become a bounty hunter. I kind of felt so as well. So actually, can I say one quick thing on Councillor Zine? There was a little tweet he put out a couple of days ago.
He likes to put out lots of tweets.
He certainly does. But he put out a tweet maybe 2 days ago. That basically it sounded like real whining that somehow all the regulations and all the advantages are all stacked in such a way that only people over 65 get any kind of benefits from the city and nobody younger. And I just replied to that and said, well, I think this is a sadly misinformed perspective. I wasn't going to get into an argument. Okay. But
what was he referring to?
I don't know whether it was talking about
parking.
You've heard it many times over. What? There's this, sort of this perception that people who are older, they own all the wealth, they own all the housing, they have all the rights.
They
want to have a car and do everything with a car, that somehow the city is going to bend over backwards to allow. Yeah. Allow them freedoms that somehow the city is out there waging war against younger people, and that's crap. I mean, that is total crap. And I said so, and I thought, okay, well, this is going to be a real argument. I'm going to get it. Some of the Azeem acolytes are going to start yelling at me, how dare you.
They'll say
no, Councillor Azeem deleted his tweet. Whoa. I think he thought better of it and realize that he's basically declaring war against older people. And
I think he's learning what it means to be a public official. Trump never learned, but he just can't just blurt things out that you like. You have to think of the consequences.
I know, but you're in a different position. And now I will speak as sort of probably the chief advocate for proportional representations in the election, but I will readily acknowledge that one of the worst aspects of PR as practiced in places like Cambridge is that it gives every incentive for an elected official to play to sing to their own choir.
Right, because they don't need many votes.
Right.
They really
don't. If you've got a bunch of people who are upset because it's hard for a younger person to find housing that's affordable to them. Especially if they're not seeking quote affordable housing, but if they're just looking for reasonable rent, it's tough. Mm-hmm. It's right now we're in a pretty tough period.
It's around the country. It's
all around the country.
Yeah,
it absolutely is. So, but the thing is, just basically making this out as though somehow your generation has the worst of all possible historical generations, like completely negating the fact that there was a depression where a lot of people had it a lot harder, once upon a time. But, again, getting back to the proportional representation aspect of things. And again, I'm not here to sort of to disproportional representation, but.
But that is one aspect of it that I don't like.
Right. If you have certain counselors who all they want to do is sort of raise issues either about
appeal to their base,
race or gender or age or whatever, as opposed to being a more comprehensive elected official, comprehensive elected official who's trying to represent everybody to some degree. You know, then you run into these kinds of, you know, silo politics, and I don't like it at all. Yeah. It really irritates me greatly. Honestly, if you think about it, even, you know, some of the bike lane discussion falls into that category too.
Oh, absolutely.
If you decided that a certain brand of bicycle advocate is pivotal to your election, and then you basically play to that, even if you might have a greater wisdom based on discussion with your colleagues and other
like the whole the Fresh Pond golf course fiasco, that whole thing was a similar kind of thing. It's like, who are these people using our this space that could be used for other things, and who are they? I mean, they're the property, you know.
I know. No, the Fresh Pond one, that issue, you know, and again, and I'm not saying there aren't other ways of thinking about the open space, you know, and
yeah, whatever. But that in particular, you could not. It is regulated by lots of other things, and in fact, the fact that they even got a golf course was questionable. But that was back in the '30s, right?
But you know what was happening there. I mean, it was just screaming right through that entire issue.
It was this notion of not having the information either.
It's those aristocratic older people who have this privilege playing golf, and they don't need, a lot of the people who were making that point had no idea who goes golfing there.
Right. And also, so what? And it makes money. It pays for itself too.
I know.
And so what if other people use it? It's a public course and a lot of people like it. Leave it alone, you know?
Yeah.
So.
No, and I think ultimately that's kind of where
that happened.
Right?
Yeah.
But, you know, there's still that incentive for elected officials to sort of, you know, play into their narrow constituencies. And
that probably happens a lot of places too, even,
I agree, but you know, if you are a district based councilor who represents an entire district, then you have to think about everybody in your district. You're not just going to sort of narrow into one ideological, contingent.
But we don't have district based. We have, you're right. So no, we have cities that they should be.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, you know, I never thought I'd see the day where I even started to, you know, at least scratch my head a little bit about the PR, downside of PR. But, you know, when I see people playing into that style of politics, it really worries me. You know, I think it's time for everybody to kind of get
there are places that have city managers and also have district representatives do not have a PR system of voting.
Absolutely right. In fact, city manager,
that could be a change.
City manager and town manager form of government are actually more common than any other thing else across the country.
Right.
No, across the country.
Really? Okay.
Right. Yeah. You know, big cities tend to have directly elected mayors.
That's true.
You know, acting as chief executive officers.
Brookline has a town manager, I believe.
Right. No, and I think there's a reason why we've sort of stably come to that point, because it's a system that tends to work reasonably well, you know. But, you know, the larger a city gets, the more there's kind of a populism thing that takes over, which can often lead to there being a movement for things like directly elected mayors with authority.
Are we that large, really?
I don't think we're really large enough that maybe that would actually be worth going toward. But ultimately, if that was a proposal that came out of, for example, a charter review, there would be, you'd have a real argument about it. And there would probably be a lot of people who just by default would say, well, why don't we have a direct elected mayor? They wouldn't even think about what the downsides
and those 60% they said that are renters, are they going to be here in the next few years? I mean, it just,
well, you know,
there's a, I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway, it's, we'll
a
see.
A lot to think about. Yeah.
Definitely, definitely.
Oh, boy. So, okay.
Actually, I want to say just a few things because it is April 19th. I might just sort of wander off into a somewhat less political realm. One of the nice things about living in
New England,
where we are,
is
that we actually are so surrounded by history. In Cambridge, you know, if a person was a fan of, strange and ironic as it is, The United States Army was formed initially in Cambridge, the Washington really? Elm at this Cambridge Common.
No,
so you can, I yes, didn't know that. Yeah, that's where,
not that that's not what you're showing here.
That's where General Washington yeah. basically took the commission to become commander of the United States Army
in Cambridge.
In Cambridge, yeah. Wow. So you could, you know, it's one of the joys of living here yeah. is that you are surrounded by this. But you know, not far from Cambridge, you can, mm-hmm. you know, as Paul Revere and William Dawes know, yeah. you could
take a horse and
you could take a horse as they do in the reenactments and
or bike. I think, you could yeah. bike.
And they actually had reenactments in Lexington Town Green yesterday.
Have you ever seen those? I've never seen.
I've gone out to Concord yeah. for the reenactments over by the okay. Old North Bridge, but I actually didn't stay around too much for the reenactment, but I did the pancake breakfast where everybody was dressed as either British militiamen, U.S. militiamen or British soldiers. Wow. And we're all just eating pancakes together. It was really kind of fun.
That's got to be pre-COVID, right?
Oh yeah, this was many years ago.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say.
So we went out, it was Renee's birthday. So we actually went out for a little walk around Concord and, you know, and I actually find great inspiration going to these. Mm-hmm. And I have to also just say parenthetically that
yeah.
as we were going along some of the trails, when you saw the yellow and blue flags of Ukraine, you couldn't yeah. help but draw parallels between the American Revolution, you know, and yeah. fighting and, you know, a greater force, you know, for independence, yeah. you know, you just feel it. It's mm-hmm. just, it really yeah. runs through you when you're there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I always find, you know, the embattled farmer symbolism of the statue just beautiful, you yeah. know, as the old Concord hymn reads, you know, by the rude bridge that arched the flood, their flag to April's breeze unfurled, where once the embattled farmers stood and fired the shot heard round the world. Yeah. But, you know, it's one of those things I would encourage people in Cambridge to get the hell out of Cambridge sometimes yeah. and go yeah. to places like yeah. it's not far, you know, in a half hour you can be there, you know, and, you know, just a sort of a panoramic view of the Old North Bridge with it there. And I always probably by the inscriptions from, you know, the language used at, like, for example, the grave of the British soldiers, you know, especially that chilling line where their English mother made her moan, you know, and this is where the British soldiers died, you know. But, you know, also it's not just about history. You know, I did this rather crude map today just to illustrate how.
Yeah, I didn't remember see that.
We actually was it a year ago we did on it my was, birthday.
It was 2020, I think.
Might have even been. Yeah. So we did a walk along the old railroad line, which is the now it's called the Reformatory Trail, which actually can take you out to the Great Meadows National Wildlife Refuge, which is a beautiful place. Mm-hmm. But what's really kind of interesting, and I didn't realize until the other day how incredibly close that is to the Old North Bridge. So we actually went along there. And then cruises a little place called the Dyke Trail or the Edge Trail. Yes. It actually takes you right over to the Old North Bridge. And then you can come back along the old railroad grade.
Yeah.
One place we did not go to was actually Author's Ridge, where some of the great Concord authors, you know, are buried. But you can actually make a very nice loop.
That's a nice, We did. Was it as hot? Remember how hot it was the day?
It was pretty warm that day when we did it. But we started at the eastern end of Bedford, and we hiked into Concord to go to the refuge.
Oh, nice!
This one here, we actually started at the refuge, and then we went over to the Old North Bridge. And it's a very nice thing. And you know, if anybody wants, you know, take me along. I'll go. I'll give a narrated tour any old time. You know, it's really great. But, you know, there are so many places, you know, in and around Cambridge where you can really, really take in the history of it all. Mm-hmm. I saw somebody posted a photo, kind of a nice photo of the USS Constitution down at the old Charlestown Navy Yard. More there, you know, and it's another one of those, you know, that's a boat that they'll take out for into Boston Harbor for a turnaround on July 4th. But it's a beautiful thing.
It's stationed there now, right? Can you go on it?
I think they've resumed.
Started tours, right?
Yeah, I believe so. But where the photo was taken, because I've led walks there, is exactly the spot where Paul Revere landed, you know? And there are usually markers that actually show this is where the boat they came across from downtown Boston, you know, and they, or they got the signal from the lantern up at the Old North Church, you know, to, you know, one if I land, two if I see, you know.
Is it kind of all like of, Russia invading Ukraine? It was like the British coming and taking well, away our independence?
Yeah, well, we were sort of trying to declare our independence, which is a little bit different than having our independence taken away.
Away but, from us, right, already having a...
Yeah. But, you know, as I say, it's there's barely a part of Cambridge you can walk in where there wasn't something extraordinary has happened historically. It's really one of the sweetest things about living here.
You know, like I think, Fort Washington right near me. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. You can actually still see some of the mounds that were there for the you know, protection of the sweeping view of the Charles River, which is now blocked by MIT buildings and other things. But, you know, once upon a time, that was a really significant place. Yeah.
Yeah, so, I did a nice little zip doc with CCTV in a class several years ago about Fort Washington. I don't know if it's on their site, but very nice. All about the history of that.
Yeah. And then maybe just in the last minute, something here. I just wanted to just wanted to mention, you know, I had a sort of an artificial high yesterday of seeing that the COVID numbers for Cambridge, where there were zero new cases yesterday. And I said, well, enjoy it while it lasts, because
what happened today?
Well, there were 218 today, but it was because
the long
weekend, a lack of reporting. So I said, you know, that's not a real zero, you know, so sure enough, but the numbers are up, but hopefully I'm still trying to be optimistic about it, but you know, we're not out of the woods yet. I guess that's
it. Yeah, I got my second booster last week.
I'm going to schedule mine pretty soon as well.
I got a Moderna instead of a Pfizer, and now I heard that Moderna is coming out with a new booster, maybe in the fall, that will encompass all of these other ones. So I guess I'll get my
third. All right. Whatever. Well, anyway, on that,
we gotta go.
Note, we'll see you
in a couple weeks.
Cambridge Inside Out.
Bye.